Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. Hey, it is Friday, July 31st. First thing, I apologize for a little later episode release today. I usually try to do it first thing in the morning, but today was just a busy one, and the day got away from me. So I apologize, but let's get started. On Wednesday this week, the Dow Jones dropped over 1,100 points. Tech stocks got absolutely crushed, and South Korea's stock exchange triggered circuit breakers twice. Feels like the word of the week was bubble. AI bubble, tech bubble, market bubble, all of that. Then on Thursday, the market bounced back and everyone relaxed, which is actually the more interesting thing to pay attention to, because that cycle of panic followed by relief followed by everything's fine is exactly what happens inside a bubble before it pops. The drop feels scary for a day. The recovery makes everyone feel smart again, and the pattern repeats itself until the one time it doesn't recover. But I realize that even though I keep hearing the word bubble, I wasn't actually sure how to define what one is versus just a market that went up a lot and then came down. Because as you know, markets go up and down all the time, and not every drop is a bubble popping. So what makes something a bubble specifically? Like, how do they form? And is there any way to know when you're inside of one before it's too late? Well, the answer goes back centuries, and they follow a pattern that's so consistent, it's almost eerie. Because the same psychology that inflated tulip prices in 1637 Holland is the same psychology driving AI stock prices in 2026 America. And the people inside each bubble were equally convinced that their situation was different. So what is a bubble? Well, first off, it's not just when prices go up a lot. Prices can go up for perfectly good reasons. A company invents something transformative, demand increases, revenue grows, and then the stock price reflects that real value. That's not a bubble. That's actually a market working the way that it's supposed to. A bubble is when the reason that people are actually buying shifts from, I think this is worth the price, to, I think someone else will pay more than I did. That shift is what you need to know. Before it, you're investing. And after it, you're speculating. And in speculation, the only thing supporting the price is the belief that there's always someone willing to pay more. Economists call this the greater fool theory. You essentially knowingly buy something at a price that you suspect is too high because you're confident that you can sell it to a greater fool at an even higher price. The game works until it doesn't. And when it stops working, everyone who bought late is holding an asset that's worth a fraction of what they paid for it. The tricky part is that the shift from investing to speculating happens gradually and is almost impossible to see clearly while you're inside of it. Early buyers have genuine reasons to be excited. The technology is real, the growth is real, the opportunity is real. But as prices rise and the stories get bigger, new buyers enter who aren't evaluating the fundamentals at all. They're actually just buying because prices went up last month and they assume that they're going to keep going up this month and the next month. The buying itself becomes the reason for buying more, which creates a feedback loop that detaches the price from any reasonable estimate of what the thing is actually worth. And that feedback loop is the bubble. Have you ever heard the quote, "History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes"? Well, this next section reminds me of that. An economist named Hyman Minsky mapped out the stages of a bubble in the 1980s, and the pattern is repeated so consistently across centuries and asset classes that it's become one of the most referenced frameworks in finance. It starts with displacement, some real innovation or shift that creates an opportunity. For tulips in 1630s Holland, it was the introduction of exotic varieties that wealthy collectors valued. For the dot-com era, it was the internet, which was really transformative. For housing in the mid-2000s, it was financial products that made mortgages accessible to millions of new buyers. And for AI right now, it's a technology that is reshaping how businesses operate in measurable ways. The displacement is always real, which is part of why the bubble is so convincing. And then comes the boom. Prices rise, early investors make money, and the success stories start spreading. The media covers it, and more people start paying attention. This phase can last years, and the gains during it are often legitimate, which makes it even harder to separate the real growth from the speculation building on top of it. The boom tips into euphoria when new investors start entering not because they've evaluated what they're buying, but because they're afraid of missing out. This is where you start to hear phrases like, "This time is different," or "The old rules don't apply," or even, "We're in a new paradigm." William Bernstein, who wrote The Delusions of Crowds, identified a few signs that you've entered the euphoria stage. People quit stable jobs to pursue the opportunity full-time. People get angry or dismissive when you express skepticism. Extreme predictions become normal. So think someone saying, you know, this stock is going to 10x by next year or something like that. And then the thing being traded becomes a common topic of conversation amongst people who've never previously shown interest in investing. After euphoria comes profit-taking, where the institutional investors and early movers start quietly selling while the narrative is still positive. This is actually what Goldman Sachs reported hedge funds are doing over the last 2 months. They've been selling U.S. stocks at the fastest pace in over a decade, while the broader public was still buying. And then comes the panic, where the price drops fast enough that the feedback loop reverses. Falling prices cause fear. Fear causes selling. Selling causes more falling prices. And the people who bought during the euphoria phase discover that there's no greater fool left to sell to. So now let's get to the honest question. Is AI in a bubble? Well, the honest answer is that nobody knows, and anyone who tells you that they do know for certain is either lying or selling something. Here's what makes the AI question so difficult. The dot-com bubble popped in 2000 and wiped out hundreds of companies. But Amazon, Google, and eBay survived it and became some of the most valuable companies in history. The bubble was in the pricing, not the product. The people who said the internet will change everything in 1999 were actually right about the technology. They just might have been wrong about which companies would survive to deliver on that promise. Most of the companies that people were pouring money into had no revenue. They had no business model and no path to profitability. But the few that did became the backbone of the modern economy. AI is actually looking very similar in that structure. The technology is reshaping industries in measurable ways. The question isn't whether AI matters, because it clearly does. It's whether the prices being paid for AI-related stocks today reflect the actual revenue and profit that those companies will generate, and whether the prices reflect a greater fool assumption that someone will always pay more. NVIDIA trading at enormous multiples of its earnings, companies adding AI to their name and watching their stock jump. By the way, this happened to Allbirds, the shoe company. You should look into that one. It was hilarious. And then also, there's startups who are raising billions without proven revenue models. Let me prove my point. Mira Murati, who was a co-founder of OpenAI, left the company a few years ago and started one called Thinking Machines Lab. They had no revenue, they had no product, no public demo. Actually, I don't even think they had an official website. And guess what? They secured a $2 billion funding round, valuing their company at $12 billion. I mean, she was a co-founder of OpenAI, so I get that, but a $12 billion valuation for no product and not even a website? That seems like a bubble, doesn't it? So the uncomfortable truth about bubbles is that you usually can't confirm that you were in one until after it pops. But let me tell you a quick story, and maybe that will help you understand if we're in a bubble or not. So there's a 25-year-old who's been making the news recently. His name is Leopold Ashbrenner, and he's a former OpenAI researcher. He left OpenAI in 2024 after being fired for raising internal security concerns and published a widely read essay called Situational Awareness, arguing that AI scaling laws were so predictable that AGI could arrive within a few years and that massive investment in AI infrastructure, chips, memory, data centers, energy, all of it was the obvious trade. By the way, very quick, AGI stands for Artificial General Intelligence, and it basically just says that it's AI that can act smarter than a human, or at least equivalent to a human. So back to Leopold. He launched a hedge fund with the same name, Situational Awareness. He had a pretty impressive background. He was a valedictorian at Columbia and had a whole bunch of other things going. So he was able to quit pretty easily, raise $225 million for his fund. And then he used about 4x leverage, which is essentially taking on debt, in order to bet heavily on AI infrastructure stocks while shorting software companies. Through June 2026, the fund had grown to as much as $45 billion, with returns over 400%. He looked like a genius. And then July happened. His AI infrastructure stocks dropped 40 to 50% in a few weeks, while the software stocks that he shorted, which means that he was betting that they would go down, actually rallied against him, meaning that they went up in price. The leverage, or that debt, that amplified his gains on the way up also amplified his losses on the way down. And his prime brokers, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, and Bank of America, started issuing margin calls, which are essentially saying, hey, give me my money back. Well, guess what? He couldn't give them the money back. And yesterday, Ken Griffin's Citadel bought Ashbrenner's entire public portfolio in a single block trade before the market opened. His fund, Ashbrenner, lost about $35 billion in value in less than a month. And here's a detail that captures the cruelty of leverage in a bubble. His positions bottomed the day before the forced sale and then bounced sharply the day that Citadel absorbed the block. I'm telling this story because AI right now is treated like a bubble. We don't know if it's real or if it's not real, but what we know for sure is that it's volatile. So it's interesting that someone had so much conviction that he was literally using debt to buy those stocks, and he was punished for it. Meanwhile, the greatest investor in our history, Warren Buffett, is sitting on $397 billion in cash. This is actually the largest position in Berkshire Hathaway's history. If I had to bet on who was right, I think history would say Warren Buffett. So let's close this episode. The thing that I'm going to take away here is that Bernstein's observation that bubbles last long enough to make skeptics feel foolish for not participating is exactly what pulls the last wave of buyers in right before the top. The pattern is played out with multiple things like tulips and railroads and dot-com stocks, even housing, crypto, and now, potentially AI. Everyone was convinced that their situation was different, and it usually wasn't. In most of those cases, like the internet, and even right now in AI, I don't think anybody's doubting that the technology is really solid. I genuinely believe that it is. I use it every day, and I'm sure that you do as well. The question is that how much should that thing be worth? Like, how much should you pay for $1 of that company's earnings? In a bubble, you don't really care how much you pay because you think that someone else is going to pay even more for it. And the story to cap off how people are treating AI and what they think will happen is Leopold Ashbrenner's story. A smart guy, definitely don't get that wrong, but he took on 4x leverage in order to bet on AI. I mean, look, no matter how confident you are, that's a pretty insane bet. He made a lot of money, but then he lost a lot of it in a single day. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.